see what it did. The red haze in Holden's vision had taken on a strange, strobing pattern. It took him a moment to realize that a red telltale on his panel was flashing, letting him know that the Ravi was calling. He kicked off a nearby crash couch, floated back to his station, and opened the link. "Rocinante here. Ravi, go ahead." "Holden, why are we stopped?" McBride asked.
"Because we weren't going to keep up anyway, and the danger of crew casualties was getting too high," he replied. It sounded weak even to him.
Cowardly. McBride didn't seem to notice.
"Roger, I'm going to get new orders. We'll let you know if anything changes."
Holden killed the connection and stared blankly at the console. The visual tracking system was doing its very best to keep Eros in sight. The Rossi was a good ship, state-of-the-art. And since Alex had tagged the asteroid as a threat, the computer would do everything in its power to keep track of it. But Eros was a fast-moving, low-albedo object that didn't reflect radar. It could move unpredictably, and at high speed. It was just a matter of time before they lost track of it, especially if it wanted to be lost track of. Next to the tracking information on his console, a small data window opened to inform him that the Ravi had turned on its transponder. It was standard practice, even for military ships, to keep them on when there was no apparent threat or need for stealth. The radio man on the little UNN Corvette must have flipped it back on out of habit. And now the Rossi registered it as a known vessel and threw it onto the threat display with a gently pulsing green dot and a name tag. Holden looked at it blankly for a long moment. He felt his eyes go wide.
"Shit," Holden said, then opened the shipwide comm. "Naomi, I need you in ops."
"I think I'd rather stay down here for a bit," she replied.
Holden hit the battle station's alert button on his console. The deck lights shifted to red, and a klaxon sounded three times.
"Exo Nagata to ops," he said.
Let her chew him out later. He'd have it coming. But right now, he didn't have any time to waste. Naomi was on the ops deck in less than a minute. Holden had already buckled back into his crash couch and was pulling up the comm logs. Naomi pushed over to her chair and belted in as well. She gave him an inquiring look. "Are we going to die after all?" But said nothing. If he said so, she would. He felt a spike of equal parts admiration for and impatience with her. He found what he was looking for in the logs before speaking.
"Okay," he said. "We've had radio contact with Miller after Eros dropped off radar. Is that right?"
"Yes, that's right," she said. "But his suit isn't powerful enough to transmit through the shell of Eros out to much distance, so one of the moored ships is boosting the signal for him."
"Which means that whatever Eros is doing to kill the radar isn't killing all radio transmissions from outside."
"That seems right," Naomi said, a growing curiosity in her voice.
"And you still have the control codes for the 5 OPA freighters on the surface, right?"
"Yes, sir."
And then, a moment later, "Oh, shit."
"Okay," Holden said, turning in his chair to face Naomi with a grin. "Why do the Rossi and every other naval ship in the system have a switch to turn off their transponders?"
"So the enemy can't get a missile lock on the transponder signal and blow them up," she said, sharing his grin now.
Holden spun his chair back around and began opening a comm channel to Tycho Station.
"Exo, would you be so kind as to use the control codes Miller gave you to turn those 5 OPA freighters back on and fire up their transponders? Unless our visitor on Eros can outrun radio waves, I think we've gotten around the acceleration problem."
"Aye, aye, Captain," Naomi replied. Even looking the other way, Holden could hear the smile in her voice, and it melted the last of the ice in his gut. They had a plan. They were going to make a difference.
Call coming in from the Ravi, Naomi said. You want it before I turn the transponders on?
Hell yes. The line clicked.
Captain Holden, we've got our new orders. Seems we're going to be chasing that thing a little further.
McBride sounded almost like someone who hadn't just been sent to her death. Stoic.
You might want to hold off on that for a couple minutes, Holden said. We have an alternative.
As Naomi activated the transponders on the 5 OPA freighters Miller had left moored to the surface of Eros, Holden laid out the plan to McBride, and then, on a separate line, Fred. By the time Fred had gotten back to him with an enthusiastic approval of the plan from both him and the UN Naval Command, the 5 freighters were pinging away, telling the solar system where they were. An hour after that, the largest swarm of interplanetary nuclear weapons in the history of humanity had been fired and were winging their way toward Eros.
We're going to win, Holden thought, as he watched the missiles take flight like a swarm of angry red dots on his threat display. We're going to beat this thing. And what was more, his crew was going to see the end of it. No one else had to die. Except.
Miller's calling, Naomi said. Probably noticed we turned his ships back on.
Holden had a wrenching feeling in his stomach. Miller would be there on Eros when those missiles arrived. Not everyone would get to celebrate the coming victory.
Hey, Miller. How you doing? He said, not quite able to keep the funeral tone out of his voice.
Miller's voice was choppy and half drowned by static, but not so garbled that Holden couldn't hear the tone in it and know that he was about to take a piss all over their parade.
Holden, Miller said. We have a problem.
Chapter 52. Miller. 1, 2, 3. Miller pushed down on the hand terminal, resetting the trigger again. The double doors in front of him had once been one of thousands of quietly automated mechanisms. They had run reliably in their subtle magnetic tracks, maybe for years. Now, something black with the texture of tree bark grew like creepers around their sides, deforming the metal. Past them lay the port corridors, the warehouses, the casino. Everything that had been Eros Station and was now the vanguard of an invading alien intelligence. But to reach it, Miller had to pry open a stuck door. In less than 5 seconds. While wearing an environment suit. He put the hand terminal down again and reached quickly for the thin crack where the two doors met. 1, 2. The door shifted a centimeter. Flakes of black matter sifting down. 3, 4. He grabbed the hand terminal again, resetting the trigger. This shit just wasn't going to work. Miller sat on the ground beside the cart. The Eros feed whispered and muttered, apparently unaware of the tiny invader scratching at the station's skin. Miller took a long, deep breath. Door didn't move. He had to get past it. Naomi wasn't going to like this. With his one free hand, Miller loosened the woven metal strap around the bomb until it could rock back and forth a little. Carefully, slowly, he lifted the corner of it. Then, watching the status readouts, he wedged the hand terminal under it, the metal corner digging hard into the touchscreen over the enter button. The trigger stayed green. If the station shook or shifted, he'd still have 5 seconds to get to it. Good enough.
Braced with both hands, Miller tugged at the doors. More of the black crust fell away as he levered the doors open far enough to see through. The corridor beyond was nearly round. The dark growth had filled in the corners until the passage looked like a huge, desiccated blood vessel. The only lights were his suit's headlights, and a million tiny luminescent dots that swirled in the air like blue fireflies. When the Eros feed pulsed, growing momentarily louder, the fireflies dimmed and then returned. The environment suit reported breathable air with higher than expected concentrations of argon, ozone, and benzene. One of the luminescent dots floated past him, swirling on currents he couldn't feel. Miller ignored it, pushing at the doors, widening the gap centimeter by centimeter. He could put in an arm to feel the crust. It seemed solid enough to support the cart. That was a godsend. If it had been thigh-high alien mud, he would have had to find some other way to carry the bomb. It was going to be bad enough hauling the cart up to the rounded surface. "No rest for the wicked," Julie Mao said in his mind. "No peace for the good." He went back to work. By the time he'd shoved the doors wide enough to get through, he was sweating. His arms and back ached. The dark crust had started growing down the corridor, tendrils shooting out toward the airlock, keeping to the edges, where the walls met the floor or ceiling. The blue glow had colonized the air. Eros was heading out the corridor as quickly as he was heading in. Faster, maybe. Miller hauled the cart up with both hands, watching the hand terminal closely. The bomb rocked, but not so much it lost its grip on the trigger. Once he was safely in the corridor, he took the terminal back. One. Two. The heavy bomb casing had carved a little divot in the touchpad, but it still worked. Miller took the cart handle and leaned forward, the uneven, organic surface beneath him translated into the rough tug and flutter of the cart's vibration. He'd died here once. He'd been poisoned. Shot. These halls, or ones much like them, had been his battleground. His and Holden's. They were unrecognizable now. He passed through a wide, nearly empty space. The crust had thinned here, the metal walls of the warehouse showing through in places. One LED still glowed in the ceiling, the cool, white light spilling onto the darkness. The path led him to the casino level, the architecture of commerce still bringing visitors to the same spot. The alien bark was nearly gone, but the space had been transformed. Pachinko machines stood in their rows, half melted or exploded, or, like a few, still glittering and asking for the financial information that would unlock the gaudy lights and festive celebratory sound effects. The card tables were still visible, under mushroom caps of clear, glutinous gel. Lining the walls and cathedral-high ceilings, black ribs rippled with hair-like threads that glowed at the tips without offering any illumination. Something screamed, the sound muffled by Miller's suit. The broadcast feed of the station sounded louder and richer now that he was under its skin. He had the sudden, transporting memory of being a child and watching a video feed of a boy who'd been swallowed by a monstrous whale. Something gray and the size of Miller's two fists together flew by almost too fast to see. It hadn't been a bird. Something scuttled behind an overturned vending machine. He realized what was missing. There had been 1.5 million people on Eros, and a large percentage of them had been here, on the casino level,
when their own personal apocalypse came. But there were no bodies. Or no, that wasn't true. The black crust, the millions of dark rills above him with their soft, oceanic glow. Those were the corpses of Eros, recreated. Human flesh, remade. A suit alarm told him he was starting to hyperventilate. Darkness started to creep in at the edge of his vision. Miller sank to his knees.
"Don't pass out, you son of a bitch," he told himself. "Don't pass out. Or if you do, at least lancer your weights on the damn trigger."
Julie put her hand on his. He could almost feel it, and it steadied him. She was right. They were only bodies. Just dead people. Victims. Just another slab of recycled meat, same as every unlicensed whore he'd seen stabbed to death in the cheap hotels on Ceres. Same as all the suicides who'd thrown themselves out of airlocks. Okay, the protomolecule had mutilated the flesh in weird ways. Didn't change what it was. Didn't change what he was. "When you're a cop," he told Julie, repeating something he'd told every rookie he'd been partnered with in his career, "you don't have the luxury of feeling things. You have to do the job."
"So, do the job," she said gently.
He nodded. He stood. "Do the job." As if in response, the sound in his suit changed, the Eros feed fluting up through 100 different frequencies before exploding in a harsh flood of what he thought was Hindi. Human voices.
"Till human voices wake us," he thought, without quite being able to recall where the phrase came from.
Somewhere in the station, there was going to be something. A control mechanism, or a power supply, or whatever the protomolecule was using instead of an engine. He didn't know what it would look like, or how it would be defended. He didn't have any idea how it worked, apart from the assumption that if he blew it up, it wouldn't keep going very well.
"So, we go back," he told Julie. "We go back to what we do know."
The thing that was growing inside Eros, using the stone skin of the asteroid as its own unarticulated exoskeleton, hadn't cut off the ports. It hadn't moved the interior walls or recreated the chambers and passages of the casino level. So the station's layout should be pretty near what it had always been. Okay. Whatever it used to drive the station through space, it was using a shitload of energy. Okay. So, find the hotspot. With his free hand, he checked the environment suit. Ambient temperature was 27 degrees, hot but far from unbearable. He walked briskly back toward the port corridor. The temperature dropped by less than 1/100 of a degree, but it did drop. All right, then. He could go to each of the corridors, find which one was hottest, and follow it. When he found a place in the station that was, say, 3 or 4 degrees hotter than the rest, that would be the place. He'd roll the cart up beside it, let up his thumb, and count to 5. No problem. When he got back to the cart, something golden with the soft look of heather was growing around the wheels. Miller scraped it off as best he could, but one of the wheels had still developed a squeak. Nothing to be done about that. With one hand hauling the cart and the other mashing down on his hand terminal's dead man switch, Miller headed up deeper into the station. "She's mine," mindless Eros said. It had been stuck on the phrase for the better part of an hour. "She's mine. She's mine."
"Fine,"
Miller muttered. You can have her. His shoulder ached. The squeak in the cart's wheel had grown worse, the whine of it cutting through the souls of the damned madness of the Eros feed. His thumb was starting to tingle from the constant, relentless pressure of not annihilating himself quite yet. With each level he rose, the spin gravity grew lighter, and the Coriolis a little more noticeable. It wasn't quite the same as on Ceres, but it was close, and felt like coming home. He found himself looking forward to when the job was done. He imagined himself back in his hole, a six-pack of beer, some music on the speakers that had an actual composer instead of the wild, empty-minded glossolalia of the dead station. Maybe some light jazz. Whoever thought the idea of light jazz would be appealing? Catch me if you can, cocksuckers, Eros said. I am gone, and gone, and gone, gone, and gone, and gone. The inner levels of the station were both more familiar and stranger. Away from the mass grave of the casino level, more of Eros's old life showed through. Tube stop still glowed, announcing line errors and counseling patients. Air recyclers hummed. The floors were relatively clean and clear. The sense of near normalcy made the changes stand out eerily. Dark fronds coated the walls with swirling nautilus patterns. Flakes of the stuff drifted down from above, whirling in the spin gravity like soot. Eros still had spin gravity, but didn't have gravity from the massive acceleration it was under. Miller chose not to try to figure that out. A flock of softball-sized spider-like things crawled through the corridor, leaving a slick sheen of glowing slime behind them. It wasn't until he paused to knock one off the cart that he recognized them as severed hands, the trailing wrist bones charred black and remade. Part of his mind was screaming, but it was a distant one, and easy to ignore. He had to respect the protomolecule. For something that had been expecting prokaryotic anaerobes, it was doing a bang-up job of making do. He paused to check his suit's sensor array. The temperature had risen half a degree since he'd left the casino, and a tenth of a degree since he'd entered this particular main hall. The background radiation was also climbing, his poor, abused flesh sucking in more rads. The concentration of benzene was going down, and his suit was picking up more exotic aromatic molecules, tetracene, anthracene, naphthalene, with behavior sufficiently strange to confuse the sensors. So, it was the right direction. He leaned forward, the cart resisting his pull like a bored kid. As he recalled, the structural layout was roughly like Ceres, and he knew Ceres like he knew his name. One more level up, maybe two, there would be a confluence of services from the lower high G levels and the supply and energy systems that did better at lower gravity. It seemed as likely a place to grow a command and control center as any. As good a location for a brain. Gone and gone and gone, Eros said, and gone. It was funny, he thought, how the ruins of the past shaped everything that came after. It seemed to work on all levels, one of the truths of the universe. Back in the ancient days, when humanity still lived entirely down a well, the paths laid down by Roman legions had become asphalt and later ferroconcrete without ever changing a curve or a turn. On Ceres, Eros, Tycho, the bore of the standard corridor had been determined by mining tools built to accommodate the trucks and lifts of Earth, which had in turn been designed to go down tracks wide enough for a mule cart's axle. And now the alien, the thing from out in the vast dark, was growing along the corridors, ducts, tube routes, and water pipes laid out by a handful of ambitious primates. He wondered what it would have been like if the protomolecule hadn't been captured by Saturn, had actually found its way into the soup of primordial Earth. No fusion reactors, no navigation drives, no complex flesh to appropriate. What would it have done differently if it hadn't had to build around some other evolution's design choices? "Miller," Julie said. "Keep moving." He blinked. He was standing in the empty passageway at the base of an access ramp. He didn't know how long he'd been lost in his own mind. Years, maybe. He blew out a long breath and started up the ramp. The corridors above him were reading as considerably hotter than ambient, almost 3 degrees. He was getting close. There was no light, though. He took his tingling, half-numbed thumb off the select button, turned on the hand terminal's little utility LED, and got back to the dead man's switch just before the count of 4. Gone and gone and. The Eros feed squealed. A chorus of voices chattering in Russian and Hindi, clamoring over the old singular voice and being drowned out in turn by a deep, creaking howl. Whale song, maybe. Miller's suit mentioned politely that he had half an hour of oxygen left. He shut the alarm down. The transfer station was overgrown. Pale fronds swarmed along the corridors and twisted into ropes. Recognizable insects, flies, cockroaches, water spiders, crawled along the thick white cables in purposeful waves. Tendrils of something that looked like articulated bile swept back and forth, leaving a film of scurrying larvae. They were as much victim of the protomolecule as the human population. Poor bastards. "You can't take the razor back," Eros said, and its voice sounded almost triumphant. "You can't take the razor back. She is gone and gone and gone." The temperature was climbing faster now. It took him a few minutes to decide that Spinward might be slightly warmer. He hauled the cart. He could feel the squeaking, a tiny, rattling tremor in the bones of his hand. Between the mass of the bomb and the failing wheel bearings, his shoulders were starting to really ache. Good thing he wasn't going to have to haul this damn thing back down. Julie was waiting for him in the darkness. The thin beam from his hand terminal cut through her. Her hair floated, spin gravity having, after all, no effect on phantoms of the mind. Her expression was grave. "How does it know?" she asked. Miller paused. Every now and then, all through his career, some daydreamed witness would say something, use some phrase, laugh at the wrong thing, and he'd know that the back of his mind had a new angle on the case. This was that moment. "You can't take the razor back," Eros crowed. "The comet that took the protomolecule into the solar system in the first place was a dead drop, not a ship," Julie said, her dark lips never moving. "It was just ballistic. Any ice bullet with the protomolecule in deep freeze. It was aimed at Earth, but it missed and got grabbed by Saturn instead. The payload didn't steer it, didn't drive it, didn't navigate." "It didn't need to," Miller said. "It's navigating now. It's going to Earth." "How does it know to go to Earth? Where did that information come from?" "It's talking. Where did that grammar come from? Who is the voice of Eros?" Miller closed his eyes. His suit mentioned that he only had 20 minutes of air.
You can't take the razor back. She is gone and gone and gone.
Oh, fuck, Miller said. Oh, Jesus. He let go of the cart, turning back toward the ramp and the light and the wide station corridors. Everything was shaking, the station itself trembling like someone on the edge of hypothermia. Only, of course, it wasn't. The only one shaking was him. It was all in the voice of Eros. It had been there all the time. He should have known. Maybe he had. The protomolecule didn't know English, or Hindi, or Russian, or any of the languages it had been spouting. All of that had been in the minds and softwares of Eros's dead, coded in the neurons and grammar programs that the protomolecule had eaten. Eaten, but not destroyed. It had kept the information, and languages, and complex cognitive structures, building itself on them, like asphalt over the roads the legions built. The dead of Eros weren't dead. Juliet Andromeda Mao was alive. He was grinning so hard his cheeks ached. With one gloved hand, he tried the connection. The signal was too weak. He couldn't get through. He told his uplink on the surface ship to crank up the power. Got a connection. Holden's voice came over the link.
Hey, Miller. How you doing?
The words were soft, apologetic. A hospice worker being gentle to the dying. An incandescent spark of annoyance lit his mind, but he kept his voice steady.
Holden, he said, we have a problem.
Chapter 53. Holden.
Actually, we've sort of figured out how to solve the problem, Holden replied. I don't think so. I'm linking you to my suit's med data, Miller said.
A few seconds later, four columns of numbers popped up in a small window on Holden's console. It all looked fairly normal, though there were subtleties that only a med tech like Shed would be able to interpret correctly.
Okay, Holden said. That's great. You're getting a little irradiated, but other than that, Miller cut him off. Am I suffering from hypoxia? He said.
The data from his suit showed 87 millimeters of mercury, comfortably above baseline.
No, Holden said. Anything that would make a guy hallucinate or get demented? Alcohol, opiates, something like that?
Not that I can see, Holden said, growing impatient. What's this about? Are you seeing things?
Just the usual, Miller replied. I wanted to get that shit out the way because I know what you're going to say next.
He stopped talking, and the radio hissed and popped in Holden's ear. When Miller spoke again, after several seconds of silence, his voice had taken on a different tone. It wasn't quite pleading, but close enough to make Holden shift uncomfortably in his seat.
She's alive.
There was only one she in Miller's universe. Julie Mao.
Okay. Not sure how to respond to that. You'll have to take my word that I'm not having a nervous breakdown or psychotic episode or anything like that, but Julie's in here. She's driving Eros.
Holden looked at the suit's medical data again, but it kept reporting normal readings. All the numbers except for radiation comfortably in the green. His blood chemistry didn't even look like he was particularly stressed for a guy carrying a fusion bomb to his own funeral.
Miller, Julie's dead. We both saw the body.
We saw what the protomolecule did to it.
We saw her body, sure. We just assumed that she was dead because of the damage. She didn't have a heartbeat, Holden said. No brain activity, no metabolism. That's pretty much the definition of dead.
How do we know what dead looks like to the protomolecule?
Holden started, then stopped.
We don't, I guess. But no heartbeat, that's a pretty good start.
Miller laughed.
We've both seen the feeds, Holden. Those rib cages equipped with one arm that drag themselves around. Think they have a heartbeat?
This shit hasn't been playing by our rules since day one.
You expect it to start now?
Holden smiled to himself. Miller was right.
Okay, so what makes you think Julie isn't just a ribcage in a mass of tentacles?
She might be, but it's not her body I'm talking about, Miller said. She's in here. Her mind. It's like she's flying her old racing pinnace, the Razorback. She's been babbling about it on the radio for hours now, and I just didn't put it together. But now that I have, it's pretty goddamn clear.
Why is she headed toward Earth?
I don't know, Miller said.
He sounded excited, interested, more alive than Holden had ever heard him.
Maybe the protomolecule wants to get there, and it's messing with her. Julie wasn't the first person to get infected, but she's the first one that survived long enough to get somewhere. Maybe she's the seed crystal, and everything that the protomolecule's doing is built on her. I don't know that, but I can find out. I just need to find her. Talk to her.
You need to get that bomb to where the controls are and set it off.
I can't do that, Miller said.
Because of course he couldn't.
It doesn't matter, Holden thought.
In a little less than 30 hours, you're both radioactive dust.
All right. Can you find your girl in less than...
Holden had the Rossi do a revised time of impact for the incoming missiles.
27 hours?
Why? What happens in 27 hours?
Earth fired her entire interplanetary nuclear arsenal at Eros a few hours ago. We just turned the transponders on in the 5 freighters you parked on the surface. The missiles are targeting them. The Rossi is guessing 27 hours to impact based on the current acceleration curve. The Martian and UN navies are on their way to sterilize the area after detonation. Make sure nothing survives or slips the net.
Jesus.
Yeah, Holden said with a sigh. I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner. I've had a lot going on and it's sort of slipped my mind.
There was another long silence on the line.
You can stop them, Miller said. Shut down the transponders.
Holden spun his chair around to face Naomi. Her face had the same, what did he just say, look that he knew was on his own. She pulled the suit's medical data over to her console, then called up the Rossi's medical expert system and began running a full medical diagnostic. The implication was clear. She thought something was wrong with Miller that wasn't immediately apparent from the data they were getting. If the protomolecule had infected him, used him as a last-ditch misdirection...
Not a chance, Miller. This is our last shot. If we blow this one, Eros can orbit the Earth, spraying brown goo all over it. No way we take that risk.
Look, Miller said, his tone alternating between the earlier pleading and a growing frustration. Julie is in here. If I can find her, a way to talk to her, I can stop this without the nukes.
What, ask the protomolecule to pretty please not infect the Earth when that was what it was designed to do? Appeal to its better nature?
Miller paused for a moment before speaking again.
Look, Holden, I think I know what's going on here. This thing was intended to infect single-celled organisms,
The most basic forms of life, right? Holden shrugged, then remembered there was no video feed and said, okay. That didn't work, but it's a smart bastard, adaptive. It got into a human host, a complex, multi-celled organism. Aerobic, huge brain, nothing like what it was built for. It's been improvising ever since. That mess on the stealth ship, that was its first try. We saw what it was doing with Julie in that Eros bathroom. It was learning how to work with us. Where are you going with this? Holden said. There was no time pressure yet, with the missiles still more than a day away, but he couldn't quite keep the impatience out of his voice. All I'm saying is Eros now isn't what the protomolecule's designers planned on. It's their original plan, laid over the top of billions of years of our evolution. And when you improvise, you use what you've got. Use what works. Julie's the template. Her brain, her emotions are all over this thing. She sees this run to Earth as a race. And she's crowing about winning. Laughing at you because you can't keep up. Wait, Holden said. She's not attacking Earth. She's going home. For all we know, she's not heading for Earth at all. Luna, maybe. She grew up there. The protomolecule piggybacked on her structure, her brain. And so she infected it as much as it infected her. If I can make her understand what's really going on, then maybe I can negotiate with her. How do you know that? Call it a hunch, Miller said. I'm good with hunches. Holden whistled, the entire situation doing a flip-flop in his head. The new perspective was dizzying. But the protomolecule still wants to obey its program, Holden said. And we have no idea what that is. I can damn sure tell you it isn't wiping humans out. The things that shot Phoebe at us 2 billion years ago didn't know what the hell humans were. Whatever it wants to do needed biomass, and it's got that now. Holden couldn't stop himself from snorting at that. So what? They don't mean us any harm? Seriously? You think if we explain that we'd rather not have it land on Earth, then it will just agree and go somewhere else? Not it, Miller said. Her. Naomi looked up at Holden, shaking her head. She wasn't seeing anything organic wrong with Miller either. I've been working this case for, shit, almost a year, Miller said. I've climbed into her life. Read her mail, met her friends. I know her. She's about as independent as a person can be, and she loves us. Us? Holden asked. People. She loves humans. She gave up being the little rich girl and joined the OPA. She backed the belt because it was the right thing to do. No way she kills us, if she knows that's what's happening. I just need to find a way to explain. I can do this. Give me a chance. Holden ran a hand through his hair, grimacing at the accumulating grease. A day or two at high G was not conducive to regular showering. Can't do it, Holden said. Stakes are too high. We're going ahead with the plan. I'm sorry. She'll beat you, Miller said. What? Okay, maybe she won't. You've got a shitload of firepower. But the protomolecules figured out how to get around inertia. And Julie? She's a fighter, Holden. If you take her on, my money's on her. Holden had seen the video of Julie fighting off her attackers on board the stealth ship. She'd been methodical and ruthless in her own defense. She'd fought without giving quarter. He'd seen the wildness in her eyes when she felt trapped and threatened. Only her attacker's combat armor had kept her from doing a lot more damage before they took her down.
Holden felt the hair on the back of his neck stand up at the idea of Eros actually fighting. So far, it had been content to run from their clumsy attacks. What happened when it went to war?
You could find her, Holden said, and use the bomb.
If I can't get through to her, Miller said, that's my deal. I'll find her, I'll talk to her. If I can't get through, I'll take her out, and you can turn Eros into a cinder. I'm fine with that. But you have to give me time to try it my way first.
Holden looked at Naomi, looking back at him. Her face was pale. He wanted to see the answer in her expression, to know what he should do based on what she thought.
He didn't. It was his call.
Do you need more than 27 hours?
Holden finally asked. He heard Miller exhale loudly. There was gratitude in his voice that was, in its own way, worse than the pleading had been.
I don't know. There are a couple thousand kilometers of tunnels down here, and none of the transit systems work. I have to walk everywhere pulling this damn wagon. Not to mention the fact that I don't really know what I'm even looking for. But give me a little time. I'll figure it. And you know that if this doesn't work, you'll have to kill her. Yourself and Julie.
I know. Holden had the Rossi calculate how long it would take Eros to reach the Earth at the current rate of acceleration. The missiles from Earth were covering the distance a lot faster than Eros was. The IPBMs were just overpowered Epstein drives with nuclear bombs riding up front. Their acceleration limits were the functional limits of the Epstein drive itself. If the missiles didn't arrive, it would still take nearly a week for Eros to get to Earth, even if it kept a constant rate of acceleration. There was some flexibility in there.
Hold on. Let me work something out here, Holden said to Miller, then muted the connection. Naomi, the missiles are flying in a straight line toward Eros, and the Rossi thinks they'll intercept it in about 27 hours, give or take. How much time do we buy if we turn that straight line into a curve? How much of a curve can we do and still give the missiles a chance to catch Eros before it gets too close?
Naomi tipped her head to one side, looking at him suspiciously through narrowed eyes.
What are you about to do? She said.
Maybe give Miller a chance to head off the first interspecies war?
You trust Miller? She said with surprising vehemence. You think he's insane? You threw him off the ship because you thought he was a psychopath and a killer, and now you're going to let him speak for humanity to an alien god thing that wants to rip us to shreds?
Holden had to suppress a smile. Telling an angry woman how attractive her anger made her would make it stop being cute very quickly. And, besides that, he needed it to make sense to her. That was how he'd know if he was right.
You told me once that Miller was right, even when I thought he was wrong.
I didn't make it a blanket statement, Naomi said, spacing her words out like she was speaking to an idiot child. I said he was right to shoot Dresden. That doesn't mean Miller's stable. He's in the process of committing suicide, Jim. He's fixated on this dead girl. I can't even begin to imagine what might be going through his head right now.
Agreed. But he's there, on the scene. And he's got a keen eye for observation and just plain figuring shit out. This guy tracked us to Eros based on the ship name we picked. That's pretty damned impressive. He'd never even met me, and he knew me well enough from researching me to know I'd like naming my ship after Don Quixote's horse.
Naomi laughed.
Really? Is that where that comes from?
So when he says that he knows Julie, I believe him.
Naomi started to say something, then paused.
You think she'll beat the nukes? Naomi said more softly.
He thinks she can.
and he thinks he can talk her into not killing us all. I have to give him that chance. I owe it to him.
Even if it means killing Earth?
No, Holden said. Not that much.
Naomi paused again. Her anger faded.
So, delay the impact.
Not abort, Naomi said.
Buy him some time.
How much can we get?
Naomi frowned, looking at the readouts. He could almost see the options clicking through her mind. She smiled, her fierceness gone now, replaced by the mischievous look she got when she knew she was being really clever.
As much as you want.
You want to do what?
Fred asked. Pull the nukes off course for a while to buy Miller some time. But not so much that we can't still use them to destroy Eros if we need to, Holden said.
It's simple, Naomi added. I'm sending you detailed instructions.
Give me the overview, Fred said.
Earth has targeted their missiles on the 5 freighter transponders on Eros, Naomi said, pulling her plan up as an overlay on the comm video. You have ships and stations all over the belt. You use the transponder reconfiguring program you gave us way back when, and you keep shifting those transponder codes to ships or stations along these vectors to pull the missiles into a long arc that eventually wraps back around to Eros.
Fred shook his head.
Won't work. The minute UNN Command sees we're doing it, they'll just tell the missiles to stop following those particular codes, and they'll try to figure out some other way to target Eros, he said. And they'll also be really pissed at us.
Yeah, they're going to be pissed, all right, Holden said.
But they're not going to get their missiles back.
Just before you start leading the missiles off course, we're going to launch a massive hacking attempt from multiple locations on the missiles.
So they'll assume an enemy is trying to trick them and shut down mid-flight reprogramming, Fred said.
Yep, Holden replied.
We'll tell them we're going to trick them, so they'll stop listening. And once they're not listening, we'll trick them.
Fred shook his head again, this time giving Holden the vaguely frightened look of a man who wanted to back slowly out of the room.
There is no way in hell I am going along with this, he said. Miller isn't going to work some magical deal with the aliens. We're going to wind up nuking Eros no matter what. Why delay the inevitable?
Because, Holden said, I'm starting to think it might be less dangerous this way. If we use the missiles without taking out Eros's command center, brain, whatever, we don't know if it'll work. But I'm pretty sure our chances go down. Miller's the only one who can do that. And these are his terms.
Fred said something obscene. If Miller doesn't manage to talk to it, he'll take it out.
I do trust him for that, Holden said.
Come on, Fred, you know these missile designs as well as I do. Better. They put enough fuel pellets in those drives to fly around the solar system twice. We aren't losing anything by giving Miller a little more time.
Fred shook his head a third time. Holden saw his face go hard. He wasn't going to buy it.
Before he could say no, Holden said, Remember that box with the protomolecule samples and all the lab notes? Want to know what my price is for it?
You, Fred said slowly, drawing it out, are out of your goddamn mind.
Want to buy it or what?
Holden replied.
You want the magic ticket to a seat at the table?
You know my price now.
Give Miller his chance, and the sample's yours.
I'd be curious to know how you talked him into it, Miller said. I was thinking I was probably screwed.
Doesn't matter, Holden said. We bought you your time. Go find the girl and save humanity. We'll be waiting to hear back.
And ready to nuke you into dust if we don't, remained unsaid. There was no need.
I've been thinking about where to go, if I can talk to her, Miller said. He had the already lost hopefulness of a man with a lottery ticket. I mean, she's got to park this thing somewhere. If we live. If I can save her. If the miracle is true, he thought. Holden shrugged, even though no one could see it. Give her Venus, he said. It's an awful place. Chapter 54. Miller.
I don't, and I don't, the voice of Eros muttered. Juliet Mao, talking in her sleep. I don't, and I don't, and I don't.
Come on, Miller said. Come on, you son of a bitch. Be here.
The medical bays were lush and overgrown, black spirals with filaments of bronze and steel climbing the walls, encrusting the examination tables, feeding on the supplies of narcotics, steroids, and antibiotics spilling out of the broken supply cabinets. Miller dug through the clutter with one hand, his suit alarm chiming. His air had the sour taste that came from being through the recyclers too many times. His thumb, still mashed on the dead man's switch, tingled when it wasn't shooting with pain. He brushed the almost fungal growth off a storage box that wasn't broken yet, found the latch. 4 medical gas cylinders, 2 red, 1 green, 1 blue. He looked at the seal. The protomolecule hadn't gotten them yet. Red for anesthetic, blue nitrogen. He picked up the green. The sterile shield on the delivery nipple was in place. He took a deep, sighing breath of dying air. Another few hours. He put down his hand terminal. 1, 2, popped the seal, 3, fed the nipple into his suit's intake, 4, and put a finger on the hand terminal. He stood, feeling the cool of the oxygen tank in his hand while his suit revised his lifespan. 10 minutes, an hour, 4 hours. The medical cylinder's pressure hit equality with the suit's, and he popped it off. 4 more hours. He'd won himself 4 more hours. It was the third time he'd managed an emergency resupply since he'd talked to Holden. The first had been at a fire suppression station, the second at a backup recycling unit. If he went back down to the port, there would probably be some uncompromised oxygen in some of the supply closets and docked ships. If he went all the way back to the surface, the OPA ships would have plenty. But there wasn't time for that. He wasn't looking for air. He was looking for Juliet. He let himself stretch. The kinks in his neck and back were threatening to turn into cramps. The CO2 levels in the suit were still on the high side of acceptable, even with the new oxygen coming into the mix. The suit needed maintenance and a new filter. It'd have to wait. Behind him, the bomb in its cart kept its own counsel. He had to find her. Somewhere in the maze of corridors and rooms, the dead city, Juliet Mao was driving them back to Earth. He'd tracked 4 hotspots. 3 had been decent candidates for his original plan of vast nuclear immolation. Hubs of wire and black alien filament tangling into huge organic-looking nodes. The 4th had been a cheap lab reactor, churning on its way to meltdown. It had taken him 15 minutes to get the emergency shutdown going, and he probably shouldn't have wasted the time. But wherever he went, no Julie. Even the Julie of his imagination was gone, as if the ghost had no place now that he knew the real woman was still alive. He missed having her around, even if she'd only been a vision.
A wave went through the medical bays, all the alien growth rising and falling like iron filings with a magnet passed beneath.